Brian! Brian! Wake up!
I can't.
You can't what? Wake up!
Can't go to school, Mom. Sick.
Jesus. Sorry, buddy, but this is for your own good. Okay, let's see. Paper, Twitter, Instagram, Tweetbot, Voxer. Ah, here we go. I tase.
What the? Don't tase me, bro!
Quiet! She'll hear.
Who hear? Where are we?
I don't know, but her. She'll hear.
So what?
Oh, you have to fight it. The power of her lullaby is putting us to sleep. We're in her lair, where she's been magically holding us as prisoners for months.
What?
Check your iPhone. What's the date?
Let's see. It's April 25th, 2020. How is that?
And the last thing you remember?
Well, we were recording our Halloween special for 2011, and did my mom was trying to wake... Oh, that was you waking me up.
Right. And me too, more or less.
And let's call the cops.
Yeah, try that.
What? No signal? Oh, AT&T.
Hey, what are those things following her around?
Oh, crap. I think those are... Yeah, they're Google Android mascots.
And her throne. Look, it's made of Android devices.
Oh, no. We've been captured by Queen Androidia of Googleopolis.
Not Queen Androidia of Googleopolis.
I bet she wanted to keep us from recording the Apple Context Machine. Surely that's the only reason we haven't recorded a podcast for so long. Right, kids?
But then how do you explain all the other podcasts that I've been on?
Silence! Look, we have to get away. What are we going to do?
Oh, I know. Do you still have the now banned but still functioning lightsaber app?
Wait, do you mean the app that was rechristened Star Wars Unleashed, but that still works if you got it in time? The official Star Wars lightsaber duel app, or one of the cheap and poorly rated knockoff apps that kind of suck?
Oh, any of them. Just don't open the Star Trek communicator app. That one won't help us at all.
Right. I'm ready.
Let's cut our way out. Whoa, watch out. Duck!
Behind you.
Careful.
Take that, you furry
there, over there.
Bastard.
Watch out.
We did it. We defeated the evil Queen Androidia of Googleopolis and made it back to TMO Towers.
Hooray! And now we can record a new episode of the Apple Context Machine.
And how?
Well, that explains a lot.
That does explain a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's been a while. It's good to hear your voice.
It has. You too. You too. Yeah. So what is it we're actually doing here?
It looks like we're doing Apple Context Machine.
I see.
I think it's a good thing everyone's sitting down because yeah. It's probably a bit of a shock.
Yeah, probably. Probably is.
Yeah. So should we jump in or yeah. Do we have more witty banter?
No, let's just jump in before we get lynched.
All right. Okay, here we go. Today is April 25th, 2012, and this is the Apple Context Machine episode number 192, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, scriptwriter. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. And we're on Twitter and stuff.
We're so professional,
and we like just have no idea how to actually do this anymore.
No, it's well, clearly, it's been so long since either one of us has been on a podcast. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed our skit on explaining where we've been. That evil Queen Androidia of Googleopolis.
Yeah, I think we blew our whole special effects budget for the year. I don't know what we're going to do when it comes time to do our Halloween episode.
You mean our next episode?
I've heard it both ways.
We would tell you that we're going to do our best to be recording on a weekly basis now, but you know, we know better than to expect you to believe us. So you know, we'll just have to let
we will out. Continue to surprise you.
Maybe.
Well, I didn't say how often.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan.
Yeah.
If we waited any more, though, we could have changed the name of the show to the Apple Annual Report.
Yeah, but then you know what would have happened. We would have had to change to the Apple Every Other Year Report.
We'd eventually, about episode 194, we'd be doing the Apple Bicentennial Report.
You know, we could wear those little triangle pointy hats.
Tri-corner hats, yeah.
The tri-corner hats.
Well, we at least did, however, pick a good week to start up again. We've got earnings.
And we have WWDC.
And toasters and fridges.
Toasters and fridges.
Yeah, and our ice boxes, as those of us who paid attention to what our parents said.
Those of you might say. That paid attention.
Right.
Because I certainly did not.
Fair enough.
All right. Enough. So, what do you say we hop into it then?
Yeah, let's do that. Oh, we have one of these little thingies that we can play.
All right, do the thingy.
And it's time for the Context Machine. This is where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news that we didn't even go. Oh, whatever. whatever. Let's talk about Apple's earnings.
All right. So let's see. They broke records again.
Yeah, it was another record March quarter. Matter of fact, second best quarter ever to Christmas of 2011.
So their second best quarter was followed by what happened to be their first best quarter.
Preceded. Yes.
Yeah, I had the words in the wrong order. It's probably because I haven't podcasted in so long.
Probably. Yeah, it used to be. That's funny. It used to be that the March quarter was Apple's just really slowest quarter because back when the company was dependent upon Mac sales for all of its revenue. The March quarter was always just a lot slower, but what we saw this time around is that the company's sales were strong all across the board, and in part, of course, because of the introduction of the new iPad.
Sure. Okay, so we have $39.2 billion in revenue and $11.6 billion in earnings, and that's in U.S. dollars.
$12.30 in earnings per share.
And if this continues to be Apple's lowest performing quarter of its fiscal year, then holy crap! I can't even imagine what we'll see next quarter.
Yeah. Well, actually, they guided pretty low. That's the funny thing, Jeff. I don't think the March quarter is their weakest quarter anymore.
No, not anymore. But if it followed that historical trend,
yeah,
what a problem to have. Your weakest quarter is $39.2 billion in revenue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but you know, the next quarter, so quarter three, it wouldn't surprise me if we see a lot of strong figures come out of that too, because we had only 2 weeks of iPads, new iPad sales, since we can't call it iPad 3 without right. The Apple cops getting on us.
Right.
So we'll have a full quarter of new iPad sales.
Yeah.
And we have additional iPhone carriers that have come on board.
Yeah, but what we're going to see is probably slightly slightly weaker demand for the iPhone 4S because people begin to anticipate the release of the iPhone 5.
Sure. And well, and I think that might be heightened a little bit simply because there are analysts and rumor sites that are talking about a June next generation iPhone launch.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to happen.
No. My fictitious money is on October.
Yeah, I think so too. In part, you know, one of the things that that Tim Cook talked about in the conference call with analysts on Tuesday was one of the analysts asked what I thought was a really smart question about whether or not supply constraints from Qualcomm for next generation products would affect Apple. And of course, they didn't directly answer it because Apple doesn't talk about unannounced products, and that hasn't changed under Tim Cook. But he actually did give a little bit of color when he started talking about how, you know, Apple worked with its suppliers and that he couldn't specifically address the... let me actually cut to the chase. The specific product that the analyst was asking about is basically it's sort of a world chip for LTE and 3G technologies. One chip to rule them all, as I put it earlier this year, that would basically allow a single iPhone model to work on every network in the world.
You know, I really wish a chip like that came from a company called Sauron Electronics.
Mordor Works.
Now, see, Motorola totally missed an awesome opportunity. You know, they could have done a subsidiary Motorola.
Yes.
And done the one chip.
Yes, the one chip. But this chip will, and it very significantly runs the version of LTE that China Mobile, the world's largest wireless carrier, uses, which would allow Apple to finally bring the iPhone to that carrier, assuming they can actually come up with a deal. But the point is this: that one chip will allow the iPhone to run just about anywhere, and no one has announced that Apple's going to be using it. But then that's never announced. Then it just seems tailor made for what Apple is doing. So,
yes,
but the problem is that Qualcomm has said that their initial inventories, the initial supply of this chip, will be limited. And so the analyst is asking, "What the hell are you going to do about it?" Really, is what he was asking. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say it was a very clever way for him to just assume Apple is using the chip in the next iPhone and potentially get Apple to admit to it without actually having to admit to it.
Right. And of course, you know, Tim avoided that, but he said that we work with suppliers and blah, blah, blah. Our point, the point that Jeff and I are taking so much effort to get to, is that we think that is a fine piece of evidence saying that the next iPhone is not going to be introduced in June. It is probably going to be in that same year-long time frame. In other words, that the iPhone 4S's release in October reset the year-long cycle.
Right. And even if we had higher chip availability, I would still expect to see the next iPhone in October, simply because I can't imagine Apple going through the we'll call it a slump, because it's relatively speaking, the iPhone sales slump last year, as customers kept anticipating a new iPhone coming out. It didn't happen in June. It happens in October. Why would you then turn around and go from October to June so you have less than a year for a product that's selling really well before you introduce a new model? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I suppose. But at the same time, I think that the big reason for the delay last year was iCloud and Siri.
Sure. But the ultimate consequence was that the iPhone came out much later. And if they go back to the June cycle, now we have a product that's selling really well that's on the market for less than a year.
Right. But they could do late August or September.
They could do that.
And get them closer back to that. It really kind of depends on when Apple actually wants that release cycle to be. Does Apple want it in the summertime, or do they actually want to be able to capitalize on Christmas with that being the first quarter and everything like that? And I honestly don't know what the answer is there, but I don't think that I think that Apple is going to want this world chip for the iPhone 5. And I think that if they do want it, they're going to have to wait until a late September, October timeframe in order to be able to use it due to Qualcomm's supply constraints. That's the short version. Right. Matter of fact, let's just edit out all this other stuff that we talked about and let's just go with that.
All right.
Listeners will never know.
They'll never know. That's awesome. I love the power of technology and the power of editing.
Yes. All hail to Logic.
That's right.
So Apple also, was it 14 billion or 17 billion? 14 billion, right? They added in cash.
Right, right. So now they have like 110 billion in cash in the bank.
Yeah. Yeah, this is crazy. And, you know, this is, to me, precisely why people who were complaining about Apple doing a dividend before Apple actually announced a dividend, where they were missing the boat. I mean, you know, Apple's doing was it $2.30 a share, right?
That's,
or is it $2.50?
I don't remember now.
I don't. Yeah, sorry, folks. I don't remember what it's $2 and change, right?
Yes.
And, you know, Apple generated $12.30 per share in profits this quarter. That dividend announcement, even with the share buyback program that was another $10 billion that's been announced. They basically can pay for the full year in a quarter and a half now. It's not going to make a dent on the accumulation of cash. The accumulation of cash is going to continue to grow.
Yeah, figuratively speaking, the money that Apple is paying out or will be paying out for dividends, they can shake out of their couch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely the case.
And now I'm picturing my own spinoff from a scene from Jaws. And
going to need a bigger couch.
We're going to need a bigger bank.
A bigger bank. Oh, that'll work.
Yeah, they won't need a bigger couch.
I like that.
I mean, if it gets much bigger, Phil Schiller's not going to be able to shake it over his head anymore.
That's probably true. Yeah. And so, of course, the result today was that the stock went up, ended up closing up 49.72. I'm looking at the closing numbers right now.
Yeah, so, at one point during the day, it was up over $50.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's back up to 610. From April 9th to Tuesday, the stock had actually shaved off $70 a share. So the increase of $49.72 today erased almost all of those losses and, you know, put it back within $20 of the record that it hit on April 9th.
That's an insane amount of money.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think about that, Mr. Walter Piesiek? Piesiek? I have no idea how to pronounce his name, but he's the guy that kind of set this off, warning that lower subsidies were going to slow iPhone sales and downgraded Apple stock.
And as we can see, he was totally spot on. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, I do think there is some merit to what he's saying. I think that his whole point was that the carriers are freaking out because they're not making any money. Apple's making a butt ton of money on, and you know how much a butt ton is. That's like a lot.
Yes.
And Apple's making a butt ton of money off of the iPhone, and the carriers have actually seen their profits rising nowhere near as fast because they're the ones that are supplying a lot of that profit by paying subsidies on the iPhone. And his point was that one of the things that they're going to be doing, like AT&T, for instance, is going to be less interested in allowing people to do a full subsidized upgrade before their two-year contract is out. And that by doing so, iPhone sales would slow down. Well, if AT&T does stick with that, if Verizon does the same sort of thing, yeah, in the U.S., Apple's iPhone sales are going to be a little bit lower. And in fact, they were a little bit lower during the March quarter. But as Shaw Wu of Stern & Gee said, and I think he's got a much better handle on Apple than certainly than Walter Piasek, but really of all the analysts that we follow on a regular basis, he said that the March quarter results show that Apple is no longer a U.S.-centric story, that Apple is an international story when it comes to the stock.
Yes. And actually, you know, that's an important thing that a lot of people – I think are still missing. Apple's big enough now that you really need to look at them globally as opposed to a U.S. company that gets to do things in other countries.
Yeah, it won't be long before China, 2-3 years at the most, I think that China is going to represent more of Apple sales in the U.S.
And that, yeah, that's totally reasonable. I mean, there are so many people there and there is such a large market that is still untapped. Once Apple can really get plugged into that, yeah.
Yeah, like China Mobile has more customers than the U.S. has people.
They're going to need a bigger bank.
They're going to need a big, yeah, absolutely. Actually, I can't even imagine how many banks Apple has their money spread out in. That's another issue. We can talk about that another time.
Yeah, on well, good. Now we know what we'll be talking about in October.
Right. Episode 193.
Man, just think of all the bandwidth we've been saving.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're doing the world a favor. Or Queen Androidia, the Googleopolis, did the world a favor.
She hates us.
She hates us.
She really does.
Doesn't want to hear what we have to say.
And we broke her androids.
We are ridiculous.
Yeah, I think this is why we're kept in a cave.
Yeah, I think so. So another thing we can talk about is Tim's rather interesting comments about the convergence.
You know... Yeah, okay, so during the conference call, for those of you that didn't hear or don't know, Tim was presented with a question about why Apple isn't looking at creating a convergent device, meaning an iPad with a keyboard, sort of like a netbook where you can flip the display around and it becomes a tablet. And Tim's response was that you can put together a refrigerator and a toaster, but it doesn't mean that your customers are going to have a good experience.
Right. And the question, let's back up a little bit and point out that the question came from Tony Sakanagi from Bernstein Research, who is a guy that I think... Yes?
I was going to say tongue-in-cheek, a guy that you have a lot of respect for.
In that I don't, you're correct. I think that he doesn't grok Apple, really, is what it comes down to. I think that he has consistently misunderstood Apple's business model. And his whole question was basically Microsoft is trying to converge tablets and PCs, so why aren't you? That's really what his question came down to, and it's just fascinating to me because Microsoft has shown for the last since the iPhone was released that it's not doing things right. So why do we think this thing that it hasn't done yet is somehow going to be right? I mean, it seems like Tony Sakanagi should be asking Microsoft, why the hell are you trying to converge laptops and tablets when Apple, the clear market leader, doesn't think that that's the way to go? That's the better question.
Yes, that's a much better question. But Tony's question, I think, is pretty much par for the course for a lot of people that are still stuck in the, let's call it the old world style of technology thinking.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It just, you know, does still thinks that you know, Apple is the redheaded stepchild that doesn't quite get it.
Yeah, well, now it's a really big redheaded stepchild with a really big bank.
And don't get me wrong. I think that Tony has got a buy rating on Apple stock. I mean, he's not an Apple hater. I just don't think he quite understands Apple. But there's a, you know, big difference between you know, what Walter Piecyk did, which was downgrade Apple, and Tony just not quite understanding Apple. I want to put it in the proper context.
You know, another thing that made Tony's question seem odd to me was that you don't have to be an Apple lover. You don't need to fully understand how Apple does things to get that a question like that probably isn't very good. And that's because all you have to do is look at the market and see what those types of devices are doing right now. And if they're not doing well, then that's probably a pretty good indicator why whatever company, in this case Apple, isn't going into that market.
Right.
And then, of course, in Apple's case, they won't go into a market until they know that they can give customers a product that is substantially better than anything that's already available.
Yeah, disruption is the key to Apple's entry into new markets at this point.
Yes. I would say the exception to that would be Apple TV, although I think instead of a fast disruption, they have a plan for slow disruption with that.
Really? I think that when they actually release the Apple TV, that it's intended to be quite disruptive.
Maybe. I don't see it. It felt to me more like an intentional sleeper product and not based on sales.
Wait, are you talking about the set-top box or the unannounced TV?
The set-top box.
Oh, the set-top box. Absolutely. Actually, I think we can even say that the set-top box was intended to be ongoing experimentation.
I think there's experimentation happening there, and I think Apple is also using it as a tool to very quietly get deeper into the entertainment industry. And if you look at what it does today, as opposed to what it did when it came out, I mean, now you actually have some television channels on it, and you have access to the types of content that the original Apple TV couldn't even get at. So you have television channels, you have Netflix, and those are things that I'm betting Apple was hoping they would eventually be able to make work. And they have plans to get more channels and eventually make Apple TV more of a all-in-one, this is the only device you actually need in your living room.
Right. Right. So if we go back to
to what we're supposed to be talking about?
Yeah, the convergence of toasters and refrigerators. I was reminded very strongly of Tim Cook's reaction to and Steve Jobs' reaction ahead of the release of the iPad, when people kept asking, you know, what are you going to do about netbooks? You know, what's your netbook strategy? And then the analyst that downgraded Apple because they hadn't announced a netbook strategy that wouldn't cannibalize MacBook sales. That still just puts me on mega freaking tilt.
I shouldn't laugh. I only encourage them.
But at that time, so we're going back to 2009, Apple kept saying, Tim Cook and Steve Jobs in particular kept saying that we don't think that people are going to be happy with existing netbook products as time goes on. And They talked about how the devices were cheap, how the keyboards were cheap, how they were just a bunch of compromises, in the name of cost, and that ultimately they didn't think that customers would find those devices satisfying. And if you remember, since I like to trumpet it as loudly and as often as I can, I think it was May of 2009. It was either that or the next quarter when I said that Apple was telegraphing to us that they were going to compete with netbooks by making what I called at the time an iPod Super Touch.
Really? I don't remember you saying that at all. I actually was able to get that out
with a straight face and everything. And this, what Tim Cook said about Tony Sakanagi's question was just really kind of seemed like the same kind of thing, where he's laying out, I think that at the time Apple that they were laying out exactly what they were going to do. We don't believe in netbooks. We don't believe in that form factor. We think that there is a different solution to meet the need that people are turning to netbooks to fill today. And they did the same thing. He did the same thing with the comments about convergence.
Yes, he did. And in both cases, the one piece that we're missing is exactly what is that product? And we'll know. It wouldn't surprise me if that's in the very near future when we know. Never mind. Doesn't matter anymore. I was going to say, don't forget, then we have the Steve Jobs factor, where he says one thing, and then like 18 months later releases the product that he says was stupid.
Right. And we saw that, of course, with the video iPod in particular.
Right.
And there were several other incidences where they said one thing and then did the opposite. Right. They said one thing and then said, but now we figured out how to do it. Knowing, of course, that's what they were going to do when they said the one thing in the first place.
Right. Those clever Apple people.
And the second example is going to end up being the 7-inch iPad when they talked about how 7-inch tablets were too small, that they were a compromise and that's no good. That will be the case until Apple can release a 7-inch device with a 1048x768 resolution, which is what they're going to do this fall. Suddenly, 7 inches will be fine.
Yeah.
And that's what she said.
I don't doubt you, but at the same time, I do. And with many 7-inch devices.
You ran right over my inappropriate joke.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you not hear it? There's no way you heard it because you would have stopped and guffawed.
No, I didn't hear it at all.
I threw it. That's what she said in.
I missed it.
Anyway.
I shake my fist at Skype.
Oh, I shake my fist at my adolescent humor.
You know, I'll take your adolescent humor over Skype any day.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, you were saying something much more important.
The 7-inch tablet thing, after playing with several of them, I'm not convinced it's a good way to go. And I know for many people it will be, but
a 7-inch device with a Retina display,
it would be really cool.
Will be, but really good for some people.
It would be really good for some people. Will it be good enough for enough people?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to put the hurt on Amazon's Kindle Fire. It's going to put a real hurt on the low end is what it's going to do.
Yeah, see, the Kindle Fire, that's great as a content consumption machine, and the screen for me, even as a content consumption device, is still a little too small.
Yeah, it's too small, and it's low quality. And the Kindle Fire is a fantastic example of compromise incarnate. It's, the case is a compromise, the processor is a compromise, the graphics are a compromise, the memory is a compromise, the screen quality is a compromise, this everything is a compromise. It was all a compromise for price, and that's fine. It's I mean, Kindle, Amazon has sold a lot of them. I personally believe that most of those are sitting on a counter somewhere. And if you happen to be the one person that's using yours, that's fine. I will show you two people that I know that don't use theirs. And I think a lot of people don't use them because they're just not that useful.
You know, I know someone, well, like you, I know a few people that bought them and don't use them. I know someone that bought one, returned it, and then later on ordered one again. And now they're happy with it. And the difference is when they first ordered it, they thought that they had something that was going to be what I will call the poor man's iPad. And that's not what it is. It's a content consumption device, really. And when they decided that they...
But how is the iPad not a content consumption device?
It is, but it's more. And the Kindle Fire is just a content consumption device, really. With the iPad, you can do content creation. You have a lot more versatility with what you do with the device. That target, that focus that you have with the Kindle Fire is for getting content from the Amazon store and viewing it on that tablet. And it does that really, really well. And my friend that bought one a second time bought it because they realized they wanted to have a small form factor content consumption tool that worked really well. And for that, it does great. And now they're happy with it. So they use their iPad for almost everything. But then when they went to go to the park and read a book on their Kindle app, great. There they go. They've got the device they want to do that with.
Right. So the real question is whether or not Apple can release this device. My assumption is that if Apple does a 7-inch iPad, and really when we say 7-inch, we mean something like 7.85. Call it 7.x-inch. I think that Apple's price target will be $299. And that's too squish the low end of the market. But, I mean, it could be anywhere between $299 and $399, depending on...
Capacity.
Capacity, yeah.
A $299 iPad would... Assuming it has all the functionality of the current iPad, would put a hurt on Kindle Fire sales, I'm betting.
Well... Yeah, I wonder if it'll have all... Well, it of course won't have the resolution capacity. It'd probably be a slower processor. Would probably be the same, but it would probably perform the same as the iPad 2.
And that would be okay. And I say that would be okay because I look at what we can do with the iPhone 4S versus the current iPod Touch. And you clearly have better specs across the board on the iPhone 4S. But for people that are okay with what the iPod Touch is, ultimately, it totally works. And you get your lower price point, but you still get iOS and a lot of the cool things that go along with having an iPhone, just without the phone part. So I could see because of that, having a less powerful version of the new iPad that sells really well. Of course, now that we have the iPad 2 at a discounted price, is it possible that Apple will say, well, you know, for that part of the market where we don't have customers that want to pay as much, they now have the iPad 2?
Well, I think that we're going to have the iPad 2 up until Apple announces the 7-inch device. I think that – so do you remember when Apple released the iPad and then the – I'm sorry. When Apple released the iPad 2, the iPad 1, the original iPad, was dropped to the same $399 price that the iPad 2 occupies today.
Right.
But it was only on the market for a couple of weeks.
Right, because they were just clearing out remaining inventory.
Right. This time around – they're keeping the iPad 2. They're continuing to make this device. Why are they doing that? They're doing that because they want to position it against the cheap devices. They want to basically make it harder for the Android competitors to come in with something that's cheaper that doesn't meet the Retina display's resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And also to better contrast against the Kindle Fire, price-wise. As soon as they have the 7-inch device, they won't need the iPad 2. That'll go away.
I bet it won't go away.
Let's bet right now.
All right, let's bet $1.
Let's bet dinner in San Francisco Macworld.
Okay, and you realize we'll both be paying with our TMO credit card, so either way we win.
All right, let's bet the tip.
Okay.
The tip on dinner. The tip on dinner during Macworld. When the iPad 2 will be gone within 2 weeks of the introduction of... actually, give me a month. Within a month of the introduction of the 7-inch iPad, the iPad 2 will be gone.
All right. That's fair enough. And here's why I think it won't go away. The education market.
Oh, you may have just won a tip.
And see, I was trying to tell you that before went into the whole bet part, but then it was too late.
I bulldozed over it, and you went ahead and let me sink myself, which is fine. I deserved it. You're right.
Well, actually, either way, we get to have dinner together, so score.
Because, you know, Tim said specifically that the cheaper iPad 2 opened up, I'm gonna mess up the quote, but opened up the market to more price-sensitive customers. That's not a quote, that's a paraphrase. But basically, he was saying that price point meant there were more schools that could buy iPads from Apple. Yeah. And an iPad 2 is a better education device, I think, than the unannounced 7.x-inch device.
Yes. I'm thinking iBooks content, meaning the interactive textbook stuff.
Yeah.
While it will probably work on a 7-inch device, will be a much better experience on a full-size screen.
If you're wrong, and at this point I mean we, because I totally agree with you and think that I made a sucker bet. if we're wrong, it'll be because Apple has decided that the 7-inch device works better in small hands.
That could be.
And that will be the reason why they don't keep the iPad 2 in the education market.
I could see that, but I'm betting I'm right. Well, clearly I'm betting I'm right because we just made the bet.
Yeah, you are literally betting that you're right. And
yes.
And unfortunately, I'm betting that I'm right, and I think that I'm wrong. So anyway, be that as it may, we are already running up against time, and we said at the top that we were going to talk about WWDC.
Oh yeah, we need to talk about that still.
So we should probably keep it short.
Okay, so which is appropriate. Okay, I found that very funny, and I know I'm alone in that. All right, so this morning Apple announced that WWDC tickets were on sale, meaning Worldwide Developer Conference. Within 2 hours, all sold out.
And the problem, especially for Ted, was that two-hour window happened before most of the West Coast was awake.
Right. And John says, so John, sad, too bad.
John Martellaro.
Yes. So we're talking about Ted Landau and John Martellaro. And so John's feeling is, if you are savvy enough to be a good developer, then you had a system in place, regardless of where in the world you were, to know when developer conference tickets went on sale.
And more specifically, he's saying that those are the only people that Apple want at the WWDC.
Right. And Ted's feeling is, dude, Apple just snubbed the West Coast.
Yeah, I don't think... I think that I don't agree with John's arguments, and we'll have a link to the piece in the show notes. I don't think that John's right. I think it actually just sold out even faster than they expected. I think it was a mistake, though, for Apple to announce the event at a time when Seattle, L.A., and the Silicon Valley are all still asleep.
And Honolulu.
Tokyo. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you want to talk, there's definitely a higher concentration of developers in Seattle, LA, and Silicon Valley than in the rest of certainly in the rest of the US.
Yes,
probably in the rest of the world.
Yeah, so it is unfortunate for West Coast people because for many of them, they woke up to the news that tickets had gone on sale and were sold out.
Right. And because of changes that Apple made, that sellout was not people who were turning around and playing on scalping them.
Right. That's true, because they made it really difficult to scalp. If you bought a ticket, that was your ticket. End of story.
Right.
If you were buying for your company, where your company could get up to 5 tickets, if Apple deems it acceptable, you can reassign those tickets to other people in your company. But Apple gets the final say on that. So it's a real pain to switch tickets from person to person, and you can only do it in a company.
Right. I think that at some point Apple needs to come to grips with the fact that it's a huge company at this point, and that there are a lot of developers that not only want but need to attend WWDC. And that the company needs to invest more resources in this event, possibly hold it twice a year, once for Mac, once for iOS, and that this is the price you pay for being a huge, huge, huge company.
Okay, here's what I think would be good, which is similar to what you're saying. Instead of two events, I think it should stay one event, but it needs to be bigger. The reason it should stay one event is because from a PR standpoint, if you don't have at least as many people at both events, the media will start saying, oh, look, the platform, whichever one it is failing. They couldn't – because they didn't have as many people there. So you do it as one event, and you don't have to worry about that. But make it a bigger event so that you can accommodate more people, which Apple really needs to do.
Yeah.
And then as far as the timing of when you make the announcement, there's no good time to do it.
And I think it would also be bloody fair if they announced today that tickets go on sale tomorrow.
Okay, that would be a good option, because then all your developers around the world have as equal as possible an opportunity to find out about the event and get prepared to order tickets.
Right.
That's reasonable. What they did with making the announcement at what was essentially 8:30 East Coast time, I kind of get some of John's point with that, because I look at that as a time zone that a lot of people are looking to for standards anyhow, because New York City. And so they announced it at 8:30 New York City time.
Yeah.
So, all right. So maybe Apple has said, and they've done this with other press announcements, where it's 8:30 New York time. So there is kind of a pattern there. And if there's consistency to that pattern, okay, at least we have that. But from a West Coast standpoint, and the fact that you're right, there are a lot of West Coast developers. That was pretty sucky for them, because they just simply missed out.
Yep. Yep. So be it. Apple didn't consult with us, much to their loss. I don't know, whatever. But we are over time.
Well, then we should probably wrap up.
Yep.
All right. So, wait. I know what happens next.
Hold on. Let me blow the dust off this. Okay. Now I can read it.
Okay. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steepliness.
Would that be timeliness now? No. The answer is no.
No. And yet I laughed. All right, and that's this week's months or years Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your comments and feedback. And if you want, you can follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
can follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrian. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is by Cashfly. The bass was recorded by Boom, just for us. And that's all for this week. Maybe we'll see you next week.
That's right. And stay subscribed, because really, we don't take up that much space on your hard drive.
That's true. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.